Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
We get the latest college football poll, playoff poll is out, and congratulations, Cincinnati now in pole position to make the CFP top four, as they have joined Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama in the latest poll. Michigan is just outside, and now the conversation about Cincinnati. Everything is getting clear. Everything is becoming clear because this is cutting through and taking over as the story of the college football playoff. Will you let a non-Power 5 team in to play for the national championship? That's become the story of the playoff now. And I got news for you. It's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to figure this out, and there's one thing that they need more than anything else, right? So let's go through the scenarios here, because I can do exactly what all these college football writers get paid, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to do all that. Here are the two. I can tell you exactly how this is going to come down. All right, let's go under the assumption that things go as scripted, because the more chaos there is, the more likely that Cincinnati's going to get in anyway, right? But let's go under the assumption that we see the teams win who are going to win this weekend in the final week, and then they go to play for the conference championship. There is no way the committee, when it comes down to it, is going to take an undefeated Cincinnati over a one-loss Power 5 conference team. That's just not going to happen. It's nice they're up there right now, and you heard them. You heard the committee talking about how impressive the win continues to be against Notre Dame. I'm going to sit here and go, really? You know, they played other games and didn't look good, but let's keep focusing on that Notre Dame game.
But they beat Notre Dame, and that's Barta and everybody. They're going to pound. They're bringing out every drum that they possibly could and every trumpeter. Let's make that the only game that matters season.
It's the only game they played, right? That's it. All the other, what about the games they didn't look good, like, you know, five of their six other games? No, it doesn't matter. They beat Notre Dame. So let's go under that assumption that an undefeated Cincinnati is not going to get in over a one-loss Power 5 team. Because when it comes down to it, at the end, Cincinnati's not going to have a win that's going to result in the same thing as Michigan or Ohio State winning the Big 10 or the Big 12 champion, whoever that winds up being, as long as it's a team with one loss, getting in ahead of them, right? So they're going to get in ahead. Now, here's exactly what Cincinnati needs. You can hope for a little bit of chaos in the Big 12 because it's really down to three teams. You have Bedlam this weekend with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Baylor is in the mix, and depending who wins there, you're going to see a matchup of a couple of those teams, right? Depending on if Oklahoma wins, Oklahoma State, and Baylor, that's how you're going to see those teams playing for the Big 12 championship. Now, if one of those teams wins with one loss, that does it. Now, if you're talking about a two-loss team wins, that'll pretty much do it for Cincinnati, and they'll be in the playoff. But you gotta hope that after this weekend, the team who wins, whether it's Oklahoma State or Oklahoma, loses in the Big 12 championship game. So that's kind of it could happen, but the biggest thing they need is they need Alabama to lose in the SEC title game. Mm-hmm. Because if Georgia wins and Alabama loses, that'll pretty much do it. Cincinnati can pop champagne, they're in. But if Alabama wins, that screws a lot of people because that's now two spots that are going to SEC teams. Because Georgia ain't jumping out of the top four. They've been the best team all season long. A one-loss Alabama team with a win over Georgia is in. The Big Ten champion, Ohio State or Michigan, likely Ohio State. But as long as they win the Big Ten championship, they're getting in with one loss. So now it's down to, boy, you better hope that Cincinnati at four is looking that you're facing them up against a Big 12 team with two losses. Because if that doesn't happen, guess what? Cincinnati's out. So it's getting pretty simple that the biggest thing they need is they need an Alabama loss. Because if Alabama loses, that opens the door for them. And then as long as they take care of business, there's nobody else who's going to jump in and leap in. Right? Because then even if you do have the one-loss team from the Big 12, then it doesn't matter because they are getting that fourth slot, your Big 10 champion, Cincinnati, and Georgia. So those are the two things they need most. You need chaos in the Big 12 a little bit, but that Alabama loss against Georgia is really what you need. If they get one of those things to happen, Cincinnati's into the playoff. But they definitely need one of those things to happen, because if those things don't happen, they're going to be on the outside looking in.
See, you're leaving one team out, and that's the team they beat. And as we know with this committee, head-to-head doesn't always matter.
Yeah,
on a week-to-week basis,
it changes. If you can't do this, if you're Gary Barta, if you're Gary Barta, you're saying the committee chair is looking at how impressive this win is over Notre Dame, and this is why they're that high. Can they really turn around and say, well, in the end, we really think Notre Dame is better, even though Cincinnati.
Do you not think they could do that? We've had another couple of weeks to look at it, and that game happened so long ago, and look what Notre Dame is on the season. Are you kidding? That could happen immediately. Why does it happen? Here's a giant pile of money, Jason. Come on.
It is a pile of money.
You know how this works.
But you're out here telling you this is how good they are, and now Notre Dame, who's not really going to have another win that's going to say, oh, my God, Notre Dame.
Yeah, you ever do something where you've got Zoe or Pam or anybody else in your life, and in the moment, you know, all signs point to, you know what, all right, some of your logic is sound, so fine, we'll just do it. I think that's kind of where the committee might be this week, because everybody's just been moaning and complaining. Why isn't Cincinnati getting their just due, their undefeated? It's like, fine. Okay? It's Thanksgiving week. Everybody's going to pay attention to the dumpster fires that are happening across the NFL. So fine. You're in.
Yeah, but how could
you? And then a week later, it's like, as long as Notre Dame goes out and pounds Stanford, because Stanford's got a couple of great wins on their schedule. It's like,
they're
3-8.
Stanford's 3-8. Yeah, they
stink.
Right,
but look at the teams they've beaten.
No, there's no way.
Sneaking around the chicken coop, I'm telling you.
What are they going to say? But, you know, that win over Stanford is better than what we saw out of Cincinnati. I mean, no.
It's a reevaluation on the entire body of work. No, yeah. I can write the speech for Barta right now.
I wish you could see it. I wish I could see it, but boy, I really don't think they can do that.
You just
the fact
don't
that
want
they
to.
Push them up here. Oh no, I'd love to see it. It'd be awesome. And maybe Cincinnati would go, ah! But it's really difficult to see. After they go into the wall about how big Cincinnati's win over Notre Dame is. And Notre Dame is not going to have a win between now and then to say, hey, this is what flipped it for us. Oh, you beat Stanford? Really? I mean,
right, but it's like the example with the kid. You acquiesce in the moment. Yeah, that sounds good. And then when it actually comes time, it's like, yeah, we've reevaluated. That's not reality. We can't do that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Today was a very strange day in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Because I thought for sure, okay, we're going to solve our problems and the Giants will trade Jason Garrett for Matt Nagy and everything's going to be fine, right? Who says no to that, right? You've heard the phrase in a trade, you got to give to get. This is one of those you got to get to give, right? I'll take Jason Garrett from you, but you got to take Matt Nagy. Matt Nagy, which we'll get to coming up in a few minutes, we find out, according to a few reports, many of the players want Matt Nagy gone as Bears head coach. But it was Jason Garrett who met the chopping block today as the Giants let go of their OC, something you kind of knew was coming after last night following the loss to the Bucks. Giants head coach Joe Judge was asked about Jason Garrett's future and said, I'm not going to talk about that right now. So you knew he was going to be fired. Look, this is change for change's sake. Right, that's all that's going on with the Giants right now. There's nothing going on that's going to suddenly turn them into a great team. Could they do things that will make them better? Yeah, but this is change for change's sake. Now you promoted Freddie Kitchens to offensive coordinator. Look at Freddie Kitchens is back now. Hey, look at this. I'm climbing out of the dirt. I'm alive again. Freddie Kitchens, everybody.
But he gets to be a coordinator. How many times have we gone through this? All right, maybe you're not a head man, but you can run the show. And now you get creative. That's all you got. You got a blank page for the rest of the season. I dig it.
But here's the big fallout from this, is that you knew this was going to happen. And Joe Judge knows that if we don't start winning, I'm going to get fired too. But if I fire Jason Garrett and we start winning, then they would think it's Jason Garrett's fault and I might get another year to be the Giants head coach. That's clearly what this is all about. Joe Judge knows if he just went down the road, they wouldn't say, well, it's Jason Garrett's fault. We love Joe Judge. No, it would be, hey, everybody's got to go. So this is a last gasp. It's a Hail Mary. If we turn around the season a little bit and the offense gets a little bit of life to it and we can win some games, maybe I stay and get to do one more year. But that's what this is really all about. Because honestly, this is headed to, like we told you last night, the Giants are going to clean house after this season, right? Dave Gettleman's going to be out. Joe Judge is going to be out. Daniel Jones is going to be out. There's going to be new people at all of those positions. And it's going to be a great place in the offseason because it will be then a destination where you can come in and join on the ground floor of a new venture. You don't have to worry about coming in and working under a GM that you don't really like, or here's a head coach. He's coming in. He's got 1 year left. You don't know if you want to keep him or not. It's not going to be that way. It's going to be a clean sweep, and it's going to be that kind of destination that the Giants will be very quickly. Again, it will happen really fast once the Giants clear everybody out. Now, in the meantime, look, if they get back to some a little bit of unpredictability, have a little life and creativity in the offense, and you get back to Daniel Jones being the guy he was the beginning of the season when you actually allowed him to run the football and had some design placement, allowed him to make plays with his legs, get outside the pocket, because that's kind of what Daniel Jones does. He's kind of like a poor man's Josh Allen a little bit. I mean, you look at the games where the offense is humming. Daniel Jones has 7, 8, 9 carries. Daniel Jones has 3 carries and the Giants get thumped. That's kind of what it is. So if you do that, you can at least have a little bit of excitement and make the offense a little bit better, and Freddie Kitchens will get a lot of credit for that. But that's really all you're thinking about right now, because the Giants, they're just circling the drain, and you're just waiting until the end of the season and say, okay, Dave Gettleman, you're gone. Joe Judge, you're gone. Daniel Jones, thank you. We're going to Sam Darnold trade you to somewhere else, and we're going to go do something else at quarterback now. We're going to go get Russell Wilson. We're going to go try to make a play for Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be that kind of offseason where the Giants will control a lot of dominoes, because then, very quickly, the Giants will be a destination for everybody.
Well, where this gets difficult, as you look at this season as it's unraveled, there are 3 wins: New Orleans on the road, Carolina, and Vegas. 3 teams that on the whole you say they're above the fold, right? And Vegas, while doing their normal swoon, so perhaps they don't stay there and perhaps they've already dipped under, but teams that have actually had some success. So then you look at, you're losing close games. Right, you lose by a point to Washington. You lose by a point or by a field goal to Atlanta. Games field goal at Kansas City. What do bad teams we always start with? You lose close games, right? Bad teams, you know, are the Jets, and those are terrible teams, right? They're on the wide end of the spectrum. Bad teams are those that can't get out of their own way, and that's what we're seeing time and again. But I guess you couldn't fire him after they win 2 of 3, right? Because you win at home against Carolina, you lose that close one at Kansas City, and then you have a 7-point win against Vegas at home, and then you have the bye week. So I guess that's one of those question marks. Like, if you really weren't getting along, then wouldn't that have been the time to say beat it as opposed to today? Like, that's the larger question for me. Like, all right, I get it. The sword of Damocles is there. Losing to Tampa, that you knew after a couple of straight losses were going to come out and punch you in the mouth, that's the game that's suddenly going to be the one. By the way, Daniel Jones threw a hell of a pass to an offensive lineman.
He did.
I mean, how do you not give him credit for putting it where the bear paws could get around it?
That's where Jason Garrett stands up and says, I called that. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. I called that play.
But we saw their exchanges on the sidelines yesterday, right? How many times did they cut to when Daniel Jones and Jason Garrett were sitting there? And then Joe Judge in the postgame all but said it. Like, if you've already decided it, just say it right then. Because then you take the stink off of the game. Well, like, and all right, that's, he's gone. And that's we're moving forward.
And that's the reason why it was this game, because what do we always say? When something happens on prime time in a night game and it's the only game everybody is watching, all the results are magnified. They're tripled than what it would be on an average. If this was a generic Sunday and the Giants lost to Tampa 30-10, you could move on. But when you know the spotlight's going to be on what kind of plays are you calling when you have three receivers in the same area for the football, when you watch Daniel Jones throw really bad interceptions, you watch bad body language, everything gets magnified. And that's why this let this happen. Right? It was no surprise, and you knew Joe Judge when he came to the press conference after, but because that's the way it goes. You suck on national television, heads always are going to roll. You suck on at 4:15 on a Sunday when you're opposite Cowboys Chiefs, no one's really going to care as much. Yeah. It's just how it works.
No, there were. I mean, obviously the two interceptions last night might have been, I mean, let's rank the worst interceptions we've seen this year. Matt Stafford's still number one from the end zone.
Yeah, but Daniel Jones might be number two.
Yeah, well, the other is that you had a couple of plays that got ISO'd of him throwing while moving backwards. And then just trying to whip this person. So, you know, it's usually easier when you put your 240 pounds through the ball.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. If you're a valued customer, you deserve a simple gesture of appreciation from your credit card company. And that's why Discover matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Discover. Exceptionally common sense. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations apply. So it's going to be kind of like A Few Good Men when Kevin Bacon gives the speech. It'll be entertaining, but in the end, Dawson and Downey are dead. Or Santiago's dead, and Dawson and Downey did it. Right? That's what it's going to be.
Them down.
Hey, this is great. You changed Jason Garrett and fired him, but in the end, Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge are getting fired, and Daniel Jones is getting replaced. Those are the facts.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Marquee game of the night in the NBA, the Knicks take care of business over the LeBron-less Lakers. Serving notice that, yes, we are the team to beat as they improve to 18-2.
Come on, 10 and 8
on the season. Joining us now on the hotline, a man who posed the question, did the LeBron Stewart incident light a fire under Anthony Davis and the Lakers? It is Fox Sports 1 NBA insider extraordinaire. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Bucher. That is at Rick Bucher. Rick, what's happening, man?
Asked and answered, and actually answered before we saw the performance of Anthony Davis against the Knicks tonight. But I have to ask, I have to start off by asking, who did you make a deal with? Because we generally, you know, we show our gratitude for Thanksgiving. You're going to have to double down on that, my friend. In fact, when they ask, what are you grateful for? I'm good. I got the Knicks versus the Lakers. And I said, you know what? Take away Derrick Rose. Take away Taj Gibson. Let me beat the Lakers without two of our better players. And indeed, you got that. You got the beatdown of the Lakers. I just want to know how you set this up, because who's having a better week than you as of right now? Give that boy double serving of mashed potatoes. Indeed.
Well, all it costs, Rick, is my immortal soul. I said, give me 2 weeks of Knicks, yo. And the devil said, okay. So there we go.
Yeah. By the way, you're Knicks. What a horrendous looking team! It's a reflection of how bad the Lakers are. My goodness gracious! I think Tom Thibodeau has just said, "Look, let's face it." In fact, I wish somebody would ask him in one of the post game press conferences, and he would just fess up and go, "Look, I don't know anything about offense, so we've just abandoned it. Okay, I let them do whatever they want. Okay." And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I'm tired of coming up with offensive game plans that clearly don't work. So you know what? I'm just gonna focus on the end that I that I'm expertise at. And yes, we are 17th in that too. But hey, there's nowhere to go but up. But my goodness, what was that? What the hell was that?
Hey, winning ugly.
We are living off of Julius Randle drifting mid-range jumpers to create our offense. That was unbelievable. And the fact that the Lakers could not do anything to avoid a defeat in spite of all that, it is, man. You know, I personally was hoping. It was the Detroit Pistons, worst offense in the league. It's a team that they should have beat. I didn't buy the narrative that this was going to be some launch point for them to play different, and they showed us right from the first quarter, yep, nope, we're the same. But I was hoping, because look, it's more interesting if the Lakers are good, right? Or at least they're competitive. With all those big names, you want them in the mix. And I just don't see a way in which that is going to happen. It's a mess. That was one ugly game, and yet the Knicks found a way to get it done.
Well, and this is the worst of it, though, Rick, is that not only are they not good, they're not awful, sitting at 9-10. So, narrative's sake, you either want it to burn or you want them to rise. I was going just from a logistics standpoint of how does the NBA not say, hey, there's a review on LeBron James so he gets to play at the Garden and miss the game against Indiana?
The other part of it is, honestly, we can go back and forth on whether there was intent on that or not, but considering that he was ejected from that game in an instance where the contact occurred in a way that contact often occurs, it doesn't end up with an elbow upside the head. But that kind of wrestling on the lane line during a free throw or positioning for a rebound, I mean, that happens all the time. So I'm a little surprised that they added a game to the suspension, or suspended him for a game on top of ejecting him from that particular game. But the fact of the matter is, it's Thanksgiving week, and if I'm a Knicks fan, I'm like, I'll pass on seeing LeBron in Madison Square Garden, even though I don't know that it would have made a big difference. And I'll take the win, winning ugly.
Now, I'm going to say something, Rick, about the Lakers, and you give me agree or disagree on it, okay? Because this is, here they are sitting at 9-10. The narrative of the team has flipped. For a while, it was, let's see how long it takes until they get their pieces together and see how it gels. And now clearly just watching them play, you can tell it's not come to that point. And now the narrative is, how long do the Lakers let this go until they start making big changes so they don't waste another year of LeBron not knowing how much he has left?
Well, but this is the difficulty in giving a king's ransom for Russ Westbrook. I mean, you have Talen Horton-Tucker, but I don't see the pieces that, like, somebody going to take Russ Westbrook? Why would somebody take Russ Westbrook? And this is the other element. Unless you move some of those big pieces, because this was the idea behind it. This is the reason why I didn't buy this. Well, we got Malik Monk and we got Kendrick Nunn and we got Talen Horton Tucker. We got all these young pieces that, you know, we're going to utilize those. We're going to work them into the mix, and they're going to provide the energy that these, 9-30 somethings may not have on a night in, night out basis. But here's the problem. If you're Frank Vogel and Russ Westbrook doesn't have it going on, can you really sit Russ Westbrook in the fourth quarter? Can you just leave him on the bench for the fourth quarter? Carmelo Anthony, same thing. Can you just – Dwight Howard's one thing. Carmelo Anthony, Russ Westbrook, that's a completely other thing. So that's the problem, is that along with having big names, you have to give them big minutes and big roles. Yes, I know Carmelo Anthony's coming off the bench, but you've got to get him a certain number of shots. You got to have him playing at least partially during crunch time. Same with Russ, regardless of how they may be playing or the situation in the game where you go, we have a lead. Now, we haven't seen it that often, but say they have a lead and they go, we just need to go we need to play defense. We need to just put a defensive crew out there, and that would be a struggle with the roster that they have. But moving in that direction, you probably wouldn't play Russ. You wouldn't play Carmelo. But can Frank do that and then not have a problem, a chemistry issue, or grumbling in the locker room from some of his biggest personalities? That, to me, is what they face. And, we are hearing it, and it's kind of comical, right? We're already hearing it. So Lakers are going to make some moves. They're going to be real active at the trade deadline. I'm like, how many times do you think you're going to try to, like, refigure this or remodel this thing and come out with something better, especially when you've already traded what looked like incredibly nice pieces now playing for the Washington Wizards? That's where they've run out of bullets in my estimation, in terms of trying to make this thing into something that LeBron James can drag to another championship.
Well, first off, Rick, congratulations. The reports of the new deal at Fox Sports and the wisdom as your expanded role there digitally and obviously television and joining us each week. So congratulations on continued dominance. We appreciate being part of the world and empire that you're building.
Well, thank you. You guys know that they basically said, hey, look, we need you for another 3 years with Jason and Mike. So how can we work something out? I mean, everything else was pretty much gravy. Those were the ancillary things.
Oh, good.
It was basically to make sure that I would be with you guys on a weekly basis. And I said, sign me up.
All right.
Well,
so
they
that
told
means
me
Mike
they actually,
weren't showing
actually,
up soon, too.
Actually, what I said was, sign me up, yo.
And, they told me, they said, hey, that inside stuff he had on the Portland-Stanford women's game with you guys last week, we got to have more of that. That's what we need. I said, okay, let's do it.
You guys are so good that you indulge me on that. I do appreciate that.
That was fantastic stuff. Come on now. Rick, let's stay with the Lakers for one more. GMs and the feel. Anthony Davis, I think we're all kind of expecting the mantle's going to be passed. He's going to be the leader of this. You alluded to it a little bit earlier with his response to the game against the Knicks, but overall, that transition, passing the baton, how's that seen around the league in terms of, the ease of transition long term?
Nobody sees it happening, to be honest with you. They view AD as the perfect number two for LeBron if LeBron's capable of being a number one. But I'm not talking to anybody. And I only say that because at 37, it now has become a challenge for him to be all that he's been. I mean, if you watch mm-hmm. his game, people are defending him with bigs. He had Al Horford on him against the Celtics, and he couldn't take Al off the dribble. He has perfected his mid-range, that mid-range step back, which, I always thought he needed to have as part of his arsenal, is now... That and his three-point shooting have become the most effective parts of his arsenal. The problem is that doesn't create shots for anybody else. And if you, looking at the game at the end of the Knicks game, when they're trying to create threes, right? Down by nine, down by six, we need to hit a three. The idea is you put the hands in somebody who can dribble drive and force the defense to collapse. And now you're kicking it out to somebody for an open three, or kicking it out, swing, open three. That's how you. That's essentially how you create it. They didn't have anybody who could do that. Russ Westbrook couldn't do it. Carmelo Anthony couldn't do it. Anthony Davis couldn't do it, where he was moving in order to draw a double team and create that three. And that's the problem. They're still looking to LeBron James to be the playmaker and creator of everything. And we've just seen signs so far this season where he can do it at times, but he can't do it consistently. That's what Russ was supposed to be. And him not being that raises the question of who can.
Rick Bucher, our guest here, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon live from the Fox Sports Radio studios. All right, so while the Lakers have their problems, it looks like the Warriors, who have no problems, are going to get good news. Klay Thompson's already back at practice. Now, look, obviously getting Klay Thompson back is going to be huge. You're also adding him back to a team that really has no problems right now. How do you see this going with Klay's return? Does this mean Jordan Poole's not going to get minutes? How do you see this going when he comes back?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question, and it is a good one, because we often think, well, you just add another great player to the mix, and that you're going to get twice as good. Well, somebody's going to have to give up shots, and to your point, and who's going to give them up? And somebody's going to have to give up minutes, and the rotations change. Now, I believe that because Klay is coming off of two major injuries, that they are going to spoon-feed him minutes. They're going to be ultra-cautious, as they should be, because while I'm as excited as anybody to see him play again, I hope he gets to some semblance of what he was. My greatest concern is that he doesn't have some sort of injury again. Because keep in mind, the Achilles was simply preparing for the season. It wasn't as if it was some collision. It was a non-contact injury. The knee was a non-contact injury, and he hasn't played for 2 years. And even playing in practice is nowhere near the same speed and intensity of playing in a regular season game. So I don't think it's a problem that they're going to have to deal with right off the bat, because I would imagine that we won't see him play more than 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes for at least 2-3 weeks before they start to expand that. Because it really is just a matter of getting him back and making sure that he's healthy at the end of the year. And if that's the case, then I think that they can manage it. The guy that's going to have a problem getting minutes is James Wiseman, because the Warriors have been so good playing small ball. Kevon Looney beat him out last year. Otto Porter has been getting minutes at that big spot. When they play Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala, and they have that whole, you know, the death lineup, or some version of the death lineup once again, that's the guy that, to me, is kind of the odd man out. I don't know how he's going to work himself back into the equation. And that becomes then a tricky thing, because Wiseman is the number two pick. Does he become unhappy by the fact that I've worked my butt off to get back and there are not minutes for me with this team? That's another hurdle where a lot of people look at it and go, you're getting Wiseman and Klay Thompson back, and they have the best record in the league. You know, they're going to skyrocket. Well, as you guys pointed out very, very astutely, like, you bring players back and guys that expect to be worked in, and it's a riddle, and you got to figure it out without upsetting what you've already created.
You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Bucher. That is at Rick Bucher. A drop the mic moment, because he said what we said was very astute.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with that.
No.
I figured we had to keep it clean so Alex could cut and print that as a promo.
You guys sounded stunned. You can credit it on my new deal.
Very, very nice. Hey, the astute move by Fox Sports 1, the new deal for Rick Bucher. It is fantastic. Rick, congratulations. Look forward to talking next week. Have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks so much.
You got it, guys. Same.
Oh, wait. Before you leave, I got to tell you this. Yep. You think you're still there?
Yes.
Knicks, yo. All right, there you go. That's good. We're all good.
Bye, Rick.
See you, buddy.
What do you got?
Knicks show. Okay. All right. Very good. There we go. Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. I mean, the AD stuff he has is just incredible. How all the other GMs see him as a guy who plays, and when he's motivated, he's great, but he's just kind of happy being who he is. And that's really the shame in his career, because he could be the best player in the game, bar none, but he's happy just playing at the level he is at right now. I mean, a great, great read by Rick. You check it out on his Twitter account, at Rick Bucher.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Zach Wilson's coming back for the Jets. I'm not afraid of Zach Wilson coming back. I'm glad he's coming back. And he kind of has to.
Nobody's afraid of Zach Wilson right now, though.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, Mike White and Joe Flacco are both put on the COVID list because Mike White tested positive for COVID and Joe Flacco's a close contact. So Zach Wilson is back and he's ready. And look, Robert Saleh talked about the fact that when Zach Wilson felt confident with his knee, he'd be back in the lineup and everything seems to be all systems go. The Jets need to see him. He needs to play the last seven games and he needs to show that, you know, yes, you're our quarterback of the future, man. This is a very big stretch for him because if not, he turns into Sam Darnold, and it's okay, he didn't flash and he really needs to, and if a guy doesn't flash at all in his first year, is he still your answer, or are you just waiting him out so you can move on from him? Because guys, teams are going to get that quarterback wrong in the first round. You don't want it to be you, but right now the only team that looks like they've missed in the first round quarterback has been the Jets. So hopefully after a chance to sit back and watch, the game slows down a little bit for him. But here's my big worry, and this gets bigger than just than just Zach Wilson and the Jets, is that there is no easier and quicker way to ruin a quarterback and ruin him by going scheme over player, right? And that's what Robert Saleh and the Jets are doing. Why do the Jets get thumped every single week? They shouldn't be. Why do they lose? Why do they make bad plays? Why do they give up gash yardage plays? And Tua is able to have the best game he's had in weeks because the Jets, you know, biff coverages and he's able to throw 60 yards downfield. Because the Jets and Robert Saleh, this is the biggest thing. This is my biggest issue. When teams go scheme over player. Because when you go scheme over player, you ain't going to win. Because when you're trying to get players who do one thing well or certain thing well and say, no, we want you to play within our system here, that's never going to work. Unless you can get all the players in that are playing in your system and identify them, you're going to get killed. Look, this is what Belichick has done for years. Why does he like this free agent so much? Player over scheme, right? You know, this is a guy that come in and play in our scheme. We're not going to go just get a great player and say, we're going to try to fit you into the scheme we're doing. We go get a player that fits into our scheme, or we adjust the scheme around the players when we have that certain type of talent. But this is what the Jets have done. The Jets do scheme over player. The Jets' best players are on the defensive line, but they only play 60% of the time because they believe in a rotation, and they can't have the same defensive lineman out there play after play. So your best player are playing 60% of the snaps on the DL, which is ridiculously stupid. And that's why the Jets defense is terrible. They're going to do the same thing with Zach Wilson. Now we got to fit him into our system. This is the system that we're bringing over from San Francisco for our quarterback. Being a West Coast quarterback and do it. That's not what Zach Wilson does. Zach Wilson gets out of the pocket and he's able to make plays and he's able to throw when he gets outside the pocket. It's his unpredictability and his ability to make something out of nothing and play street ball like Brett Favre, which is what makes him a quarterback. That's what makes him great. But the Jets say, oh, we're going to turn you into a boring quarterback where you're making your quick reads, you're throwing like this. He even said a couple weeks ago, I think I need to be more like Mike White. Now I know the Jets are ruining the kid because it's like, no, we're going to take what you do well and try to make you do something else. And that's what worries me the most, is that that's why the Jets are going to ruin him, because they're going to make him conform to, this is the offensive system we want to run. You got to let Zach Wilson do his thing, and you got to run the system around him. Don't tell him, make the safe throw. Let him see what it is to throw the football deep in the NFL. Okay, that's a throw I can make. That's a throw I can't make. I'm learning. You're learning. Your team stinks. Take the rest of this season and make sure that you know you have the right guy and you're allowing him to feel himself in the NFL and know what he can do and what he can't do and what plays he can ad lib on and what plays he needs to make his throws on. But this has been a whole thing. It's been scheme over player, and this is why the Jets stink, and this is why Zach Wilson is the only quarterback that hasn't really flashed, because it's, we're going to make you into this guy when your skill set is clearly not what we have planned here for the Jets.
Yeah, the completion percentage is definitely disappointing, but I can't put it all on Zach Wilson. Like, he played pretty well against Carolina. They got a win over Tennessee, right? Maybe that's a great win. Maybe that's not. But they're one of the contenders right now. Your offensive line's trash. You're not getting guys healthy. Defensively, you give up big play after big play, as you said. We're not seeing the defenders even on our television screen. Who's guarding him? Don't know. Go to the All-22. That's the only way you're going to see it, because otherwise they're not on the screen. except for that fan in the 40 yard line who might have gotten a great shot of it to show how much space there was. But for Zach Wilson, I don't know. Do you have an elite receiver on the squad? I don't know. Elijah Moore might be something, but Jamison Crowder, whatever. So when Zach Wilson said, I got to be more like Mike White, and Saleh kind of echoed the same thing, it's like, all right, take what's there, right? That is, wasn't that the criticism of Patrick Mahomes for 10 weeks? Is that he kept trying to push it, and you had some of those 50-50 balls went the other way? So why not take what the defense is allowing you to do, and slowly but surely, it's not exciting football, but it's winning football. And who's to say the other ones are 100% right between Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields? The only guy right now I'm really looking at, or Trey Lance. The only guy I'm looking at saying I know what he is, at least for the moment, is Mac Jones.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.